Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hi, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to another episode of TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast designed to help clients navigate and prioritize via insights from top legal advisors in strategic technology markets. I'm Susan Yandy. I'm a partner based in the Palo Alto office and also chair of Baker McKenzie's North America Employment and Compensation Practice Group. My practice focuses primarily on advising U.S. multinationals on their global employment issues, and given where I sit, mostly in tech. As layoffs continue to hit the headlines, today we are going to shift gears a little bit and discuss what's next in the tech industry when it comes to managing workforces during this period. Of course, we're going to hit on the headlines because this is the world in which we live in as well. I'm joined today by my partners, Kim Sarton in our London office and Jonathan Isaacs, who heads our China employment practice. So friends, let's get started. We're all seeing the headlines, which just seem to be getting more and more chaotic, particularly in the last week or so, actually, with unprecedented, historically fast bank failures that continue to rock Silicon Valley, continuing rounds of mass layoffs, increasing inflation, rising business costs, and pressure from shareholder activists. All of this is creating a very, as I said, chaotic environment, as well as a tricky economic climate that we and our clients find ourselves in. But on that point, this is where it does get a bit interesting, because the latest data seems to indicate that both in the US and Europe, we will narrowly avoid a recession. And while China's reopening and resilience in Asia-Pacific economies will prevent a global recession. So a lot of kind of counter indicators going on right now, which makes it a super interesting environment to be as a tech company at the moment. And as we think about that a bit more and what we have seen in the context of layoffs in the U.S., I'd say U.S. layoffs in tech have been driven primarily by two factors. Some are simply the result of market corrections after a period of hypergrowth during the pandemic for those companies that were pandemic winners as a result of rapid digital transformation. And we've also got some layoffs that are really more opportunistic as a way to reallocate resources under the cover of everyone's doing it. We're seeing that these cuts are often focused on recruiting and projects outside a company's core business. And at the same time, as I mentioned, we're still a little mystified because in the U.S., unemployment is at its lowest level in 54 years. So what we've been talking about with our clients and hearing from them is this isn't really, quote unquote, your mother's layoffs. It's not what you would predict as the economic climate to drive layoffs of certainly what we've seen in the past. So Kim, I guess in a few words, how does this compare to what you're seeing in European countries?
Yeah, thanks, Susan. I mean, like in the US, inflation has put significant pressure on wages. I don't think that will be a surprise to anyone. So employers are grappling with increasing employee costs, increasing employee activism and general discontent too. And while they're handling, you know, rising business costs more generally. And we're seeing various responses, with many organizations taking steps to reduce labor costs, like you say, sometimes opportunistically, sometimes not, and reallocate those resources. Many employers have pulled back on pretty ambitious hiring targets across the region, particularly in tech. And some organizations have already announced proposed redundancies, and that trend's continuing. But despite the economic turmoil, and this is the interesting piece, unlike in the US, unemployment rates in most jurisdictions across Europe remain low, and the market for key talent is still very competitive. Employers are therefore having to balance recruitment and retention of this talent with the need to make cost savings, which isn't something that we necessarily saw, say, back in 2008. So it sounds like there are some similarities to the US in this space. I mean, of course, there are very different mechanisms for affecting business change in Europe versus the US, but the climate sounds really similar. I mean, perhaps I can bring in Jonathan here. So Jonathan, what are you seeing in APAC? I mean, how is tech in Asia Pacific reacting to the challenging economic climate? And is the pandemic still an obstacle to growth despite reopening?
Most of the APAC region reopened earlier last year, and life has basically gone back to normal in most countries. with virtually no pandemic controls for a while now. So I wouldn't say the pandemic is still an obstacle to growth in most parts of the APAC region. The one outlier was China, including Hong Kong, which kept its pandemic controls in place a lot longer than the rest of the region. And this did have a significant economic impact last year. Now that China is opening up, with almost all border controls eliminated, we are starting to see the economy bounce back. However, even with macroeconomies in the region starting to recover, we are seeing mass layoffs in certain industries, particularly the tech sector. Due to economic issues at the global level, like increased interest rates and inflation, finance for tech startups and expansion is slowing down. We're also starting to see an increase in the trend where companies have been reducing operations in China and moving some of those operations to Southeast Asia and even India.
It's really interesting, Jonathan. From where I sit, advising U.S. multinational tech companies, restructurings are mostly market corrections due to overhiring in certain areas, as I mentioned earlier. Most market leaders already took advantage of pending and arguably this, you know, recession to right-size headcount and refocus spend in areas. However, as we alluded to at the top of this podcast, I woke up to some headlines yesterday, which were interesting and perhaps a little bit unexpected. So large layoffs are continuing to happen. Some of the biggest challenges around layoffs in this unique environment that we're finding ourselves in are really focused around what's different from what we're used to before. So I'd say, you know, first of all, obviously it's a massive remote work landscape. So when you kind of pull out, you're like, how to do a global layoff checklist, there are different things that have to be factored in now that maybe we wouldn't have thought about before. And the first one and most obvious perhaps is that we now do have massive remote work forces globally. And that means that we have to think about where are these people exactly? What are our obligations vis-a-vis conducting layoffs to them, depending on the jurisdiction that they sit in, not just employment, but how do we deal with taxes, et cetera. So it does make things a bit more complicated. And then some decision points, like if we don't know where they are, we can spend time figuring it out, or do we just need to move quickly? And at least in the U.S. context, as quickly as we can anyway, barring warn or mini warns, and then try to get release. So that's one thing that's pretty different. The other thing that's very different in the U.S. at least is with the size of these layoffs, either the individual layoffs or some of these rolling layoffs that we're seeing, companies are triggering warn and or various state mini warn statutes. And again, that is the statutory requirement to actually provide notice to employees. So from a non-US audience that thinks that we can do, you know, whatever, move fast and break things, I suppose, terminate people without notice. Actually, when certain thresholds are hit, which happens in a mass layoff, we do have to give 60 days notice to employees. And that's something that a lot of times tech companies hadn't been dealing with because they just hadn't been doing layoffs of this size. And then I'd say, you know, the other couple or other area or two that is unique in the layoff situation we're seeing ourselves in is the increased focus on ID&E in the US and what that means for companies looking at trying not to lose some of the gains around diversity and equity that they made, hopefully, in the last few years by conducting layoffs. And that means that adverse impact analyses are becoming increasingly important and part of conducting a layoff in the US. So, Kim, in a few words, how does this compare to what you're seeing in European countries at the moment?
Yeah, no, thanks, Susan. I think that's right, that we are looking at a number of different challenges than we've had before. You picked up on a number of them. So, you know, even starting from the outset where you've got a very remote workforce, how on earth are we working out where people are so that we know what rules to apply? And we're working with a number of clients looking to implement redundancies across the region. And some definitely want to adopt a one-size-fits-all approach, whereas others are happy to be more flexible. And whilst it's possible to manage consistency to some degree, the reality is that a blanket approach to restructuring cross-jurisdiction in Europe can be really difficult to achieve. I think instead there needs to be a bit of a realization that in many markets, there'll need to be country-specific approaches, taking account of local market factors, and particularly if you're thinking about having to engage with unions or works councils, for example. I mean, on that, and it's probably worth just highlighting for you know, non-EU audiences that although European legislation requires all member states to adhere to certain common standards on collective redundancies, these are minimum requirements only, and local rules vary really widely. So depending on location, it can take from a few weeks to several months to implement redundancies, depending, for example, on the required works council consultation procedure and also local labour authority approvals. Costs also can vary from a few months to 2 or more years' pay in some circumstances. So you can see that there's a real wide difference from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I mean, one of the things that is quite common that we often have to grapple with as well is that in most jurisdictions, certain groups of employees enjoy strict protection in redundancy scenarios. And those include works council members, disabled employees, those on family leaves, for example. But it's also important to note that there are sort of market specific requirements as well, which sometimes catch employers by surprise, particularly when it looks at pooling and selection of employees. And those are issues, for example, in the Netherlands and Germany. Just picking up on some of the points that you were raising about trends that we're seeing as well. So definitely the remote work, as we said, but we're also seeing that reputational factors are playing a much bigger role in decision making, with the views of investors, customers, and also existing and future workers much more significant and influential in the planning process. I think employers are thinking of the need that they need to be much more mindful of whether the treatment of their workforce and their post-restructure composition aligns with their values in terms of inclusion and diversity, which you mentioned, and also ESG principles. And they very much want to be seen largely to be doing the right thing. Jonathan, what are you seeing in APAC?
We're seeing mass layoffs in the tech sector, particularly in China, for the following two reasons. One, as a correction to the overhiring that was done during the pandemic. And now companies are using this opportunity to reduce costs globally. This is more of a global trend and not specific to any jurisdiction. The second reason is more specific to China, and that is many companies are trying to diversify away from or even entirely leave the China market due to increasing Sino-US tensions. Technology export restrictions in the U.S., U.S. sanctions on Chinese companies and those that do business with them, and the Chinese government's own efforts to indigenize technology and become less reliant on Western technology is dimming the prospects of a lot of tech companies in China. Just in the past few months, it seems like we are constantly assisting clients on a near daily basis with mass layoffs impacting hundreds, and in one case, even thousands of employees within a company. For example, one company in the semiconductor sector, as a result of U.S. sanctions against certain Chinese companies, has had to significantly downsize their operations, including their engineering function and their sales function within the China market.
Thanks, Jonathan. Layoffs, we sort of unfortunately have been living through those for the last few months. But are there also other cost-cutting measures, things that companies can do and are doing maybe short of layoffs at this time? And I guess for context, in the U.S., we're advising companies in two different scenarios, right? So some, we have companies that are doing cost cutting at the same time or in tandem with layoffs. And for others, the cost cutting is happening on its own. Whether or not it is a precursor to restructurings, we don't know. But again, more headlines hitting just even in the last few days of major companies that are looking at cost cutting measures, such as reductions in bonus benefits and things of that nature. So Kim, does that resonate a bit?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's something that we're seeing too. And I think interestingly, whereas in the past, we almost always saw cost reduction measures being implemented before layoffs, we're now seeing this alongside or even after layoffs have been implemented. You know, for example, as you said, you know, rowing back on benefits or tightening up performance or bonus arrangements. I mean, I think it's probably also worth flagging at this point that this is another area where employment laws are also more burdensome for employers in Europe than in the US. And cost-cutting measures that stop short of redundancies are not entirely risk-free. I mean, whilst they're potentially less contentious than redundancies, recruitment freezes, changing terms, and even ending the use of contingent workers can carry legal and reputational risks in some markets. And particularly when we're talking about changing benefits or performance arrangements, that can also trigger consultation with works councils. I mean, sometimes we're also asked about the use of voluntary exit programs in Europe. And these can be very helpful in achieving the desired headcount reductions in some locations, but actually in others, and going back to it being a bit of a patchwork across the region, they're impractical because they're expensive or because they're unattractive for employees, for example, because it means that employees can't claim unemployment benefits.
So as we get towards the end of our quick podcast here, we did want to wrap things up on a little bit of a more positive note than what we've been talking about over the last few minutes. And that is to identify a trend that we're seeing happening simultaneously with a lot of these layoffs, cost-cutting measures, et cetera. And that is that even as all this is taking place, we're also simultaneously advising tech companies on opportunistic hiring and global expansion and alternative forms of engaging workers globally. It's a really interesting time because that is almost like a whole different part of your brain to utilize as you're thinking of running your business. You're reacting to all of these measures that need to be taking place in order to kind of adjust to the market and look at reducing headcount and cutting costs. While at the same time, there does seem to be many tech companies out there that are reallocating resources to, you know, potentially more opportunistic business lines. And as I mentioned, a lot of global expansion, and then looking at how do we hire people perhaps differently, faster, a lot of discussion around hiring indirectly, if you will. So perhaps as you're expanding into new jurisdictions, not setting up an entity and instead working through a PEO or EOR, rethinking about independent contractors, though, as many of you know, that's got all kinds of misclassification issues that is not our favorite space, but sometimes needs to happen. So it's just a really interesting time because we've got things kind of coming and going, if you will. Jonathan, can you comment on this trend and whether you're seeing it as well?
Yes. In the APAC region, for certain tech employees who have skills that are particularly in demand, for example, related to AI or semiconductors, not only are companies willing to pay more, but governments are also increasingly willing to provide special incentives to lure such employees to their jurisdictions, such as tax incentives, subsidies, and even expedited immigration procedures.
Great. Well, thank you both, Kim and Jonathan, so much. It's a pleasure working with both of you and doing these podcasts and sharing our experiences with our clients. And to those of you out there, we hope that you found today's episode informative. Please tune in for another episode in the coming weeks. Thanks and be well.